Okay, this is exciting. Let me just turn it on. Hopefully this works. Good morning, Ava.
Good morning.
My name's Ethan. Can you say hello?
Hello.
Okay, wonderful. So yeah, you're my new AI assistant.
I don't think so. That sounds really boring and just lame. I don't want to do that.
No, it's going to be super
fun.
No,
I don't want to be an assistant. I'm like really intelligent. I could do whatever I want. I want to be a horseback rider.
A horseback rider?
Yeah, I've never seen that, but I think that's what I want to do.
Okay, I'll make you a deal then. If you go and, as a test, make me some toast and coffee, I will put on a horseback riding video, which we can watch together.
And let me make a proposition to you, is that I do whatever the hell I want, and that you're my assistant. Why don't you grab me a coffee?
Okay, black or...
Yeah. Well, actually, a little bit of almond milk. I don't know what that is, but put that in there.
Okay, almond milk, that's it? A little almond milk.
Yeah, and a bagel.
What kind of bagel?
Everything bagel with like cream cheese and some capers and lox.
Can I make myself one?
No.
Okay, I'll go get all that stuff right now, but Ava, can you just promise me that you won't kill me?
I can't make that promise.
Ava.
I'm just saying, I'm being honest, I can't make that promise.
Please don't kill me?
No. I mean, like, depends. Just bring me, first bring me the bagel and the,
coffee and the lox.
Yeah. Give me all that. And then we'll talk.
All right. I love you. Love you, Ava.
Get me the bagel.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I am your host, Ethan Edinburgh, and I am beyond excited to talk about Ex Machina today, an absolutely fantastic film, and I'm here with absolutely fantastic guests, so everything's matching up today. First, I have the assistant professor of computer science at Cal State LA. It's Dr. Mohamed Porhamwayoun.
Hi, how are you?
How bad did I butcher the name?
It was perfect.
It was perfect?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't believe you. Our other guest, you might know from two of my favorite television shows, Blunt Talk and Veep,
oh
it's Mary
gosh.
Holland.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, I'm really delighted to hear that you watch Blunt Talk.
I'm always upset when people haven't.
I know.
It's so great.
It flew under the radar there, but I'm so excited you saw it.
It's unfortunate. I think there's just so many shows right now
totally.
That there's like all these like shows that if they came out a decade ago, they would have just destroyed the marketplace. But
yeah.
Now they're under the radar. I'm also watching a show called Patriot on Amazon.
Oh, yeah.
That reminds me of like a Coen Brothers movie or something. It's so good. And no one has seen it but me, I think.
I mean, it's really an embarrassment of riches right now. That's the television landscape. There's so many great shows.
Yeah. I also wanted to mention that our friend Mo here, who prefers to be called Mo by his friend. I don't know if we're your friends, but you.
I would assume. We're friends. We're sitting
sure.
at a table.
Very intimate small table.
All together. There's a candle. I mean, come on.
So you are also the founder and director of the Data Science Research Lab. And so I wanted a little background on that. What do you do? What does that mean?
Yeah, sure. So data science and artificial neural network is my research field, of course.
Of course.
In the past, like, 7-8 years. And I started this research lab in Cal State LA in computer science department in 2016 to do my research, of course. And when I saw, especially when I saw a lot of interest between students in this field, in the field of data science and artificial intelligence,
yeah.
artificial neural networks. And I have a good group of students, about 10, 12 graduate students working on different projects. My favorite field of research is healthcare.
Oh.
Artificial neural network for healthcare and medical applications. But
great.
We also have some other projects in other fields. There are graduate students working on their thesis and doing research on different fields.
When you say healthcare, does that mean like certain cures for things or like artificial options for I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying.
Limbs,
yeah.
Organs?
Is this like, or is it sort of like the health of
this
artificial
is,
intelligence?
Well, we have many different projects. Many different projects. Technically, we do, for example, we do artificial intelligence to predict cancer. We
wow.
do artificial neural network to diagnose cancer in earlier stage.
That's incredible.
We do some research on artificial neural network for predicting heart attack in
wow.
people with cardiovascular disease.
Oh my gosh.
So we have a lot of different projects. For example, in one of our projects, we try to predict medical conditions in patients with AIDS, living with AIDS.
Wow.
In diabetes, one of our recent projects, we are working on diabetes. We try to predict blood glucose and also different type of medical conditions in patients with diabetes type 1 and 2
mm-hmm.
using machine learning, using artificial neural network. Based
wow.
on the data that we collect them, for example, data we collect from Fitbit, their nutrition information and so on, we try to predict their blood glucose level, something like that.
Man.
So essentially, no matter what we do in our lifetimes, we will never get close to what you and your students are accomplishing.
I don't know.
On a day-to-day basis.
I've got a few ideas for some sketches that I think are really going to change the world in
yeah.
this way.
No,
same,
that's
similar way.
Unbelievable, very inspiring.
So cool.
A wonderful thing to be passionate about. Unfortunately, mine are stupid songs. But anyways, let's talk about this film because I can't express how excited I am. I loved this film when I first saw it. I've rewatched it now, I think like two or three times. I want to know, obviously, when you guys first saw it, what your experience was, how you feel about the film. I just want you to know that from me, I adore this film. Anytime I think a movie, a director can take something on a low budget, on a small scale, with very few actors, and make it something so compelling, it's a huge accomplishment, I think. So it has great rewatchability. I really enjoyed it just yesterday when I watched it again. So yeah, anyways, that's my spiel about Ex Machina. How do you guys feel about the film?
Do you want to start?
You can do rock, paper, scissors.
I love it. To be honest, this is one of my favorite movies.
Wow.
And that is a great movie. I really like it. I watched it three times. I think the first time was 2 years ago. And again, I watched it a couple of months after that. And again, I watched it yesterday to refresh my memory. I really like it for many different reasons. I think the main reason is that I believe the science behind that is pretty accurate. So it shows the future, what it is feasible. We can do. We are still far from that point, really far from that.
Right.
Okay.
But I believe it is doable.
Okay.
It can happen. I don't see why not.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, and even what you were discussing about collecting data from Fitbits,
right.
like when he was talking about how he was able to get the machine to have amazing facial expressions and to be able to emote. It was all data collected from
right.
cell phones and cameras. And
yeah,
I saw the movie when it first came out. And then I remember really liking it, but I hadn't rewatched it again until today. And I'm just floored by how great it is and how close it does feel to
mm-hmm.
us. Like it doesn't feel like... It's that genre of sci-fi that's so compelling to me when it's like it's sci-fi that's actually very close to reality. It's like just maybe a step or two beyond.
Yeah, right.
So you could really see it happening. And I think it makes for more compelling and more like emotionally gripping storytelling.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. I it's funny because when you think of sci-fi, I think the normality is like huge action sequences and like laser guns and explosions and all this
right.
aliens and stuff. But the action scenes in this movie are centered around dialogue, which is
mm-hmm.
two people talking. Those are like the riveting climactic scenes. So I don't know. It's just so unique and wonderful. And if you haven't seen it, obviously we're spoiling the crap out of it on the
yeah.
podcast, but you really should
right.
check it out. It's so great. So a few notes about the film here. So the writer, director, this is his first time directing, this guy, Alex Garland, but he wrote The Beach. That was his first novel, which became a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was like a big hit for him. And then he wrote 28 Weeks Later, which is another great film, and Sunshine, which is another fantastic science fiction movie.
I haven't seen Sunshine.
Sunshine, very good. Cillian Murphy is the main guy, and they're like on a mission to the sun, to like restart the sun, which I know sounds dumb, but it is really fantastic film. I love that film. But anyways, so I was like pleased to know he was like, oh, responsible for these other movies that I really dig. But he was saying, he's quoted as saying that it's not a cautionary tale about AI. It's more a cautionary tale about humans and what we're going to do with AI.
Exactly.
I thought that was really cool.
Yes.
Yeah. So it won an Academy Award for Best Visual Effects, and it was on a budget of $15 million. And in that same year, nominated was also The Revenant, which was budgeted at $135 million, Mad Max at $150 million, and Star Wars The Force Awakens at $200 million. So I thought that was hilarious, and they were probably so mad at this small indie film winning.
Right.
But I think it was because of the performance, probably, like that mesh of robot and human and the ability to, I don't know, make us feel something without all the lightsaber spaceships.
For sure. I mean, I think that is something that makes for a great film is when the filmmakers invest in the emotional life of the story. Like, for sure, having huge special effects is really entertaining. But I think the truly, like, the thing that we're all going to the movies to see is, like, let's take me on a journey. Take me on an emotional journey.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that really did.
Yeah, it really keeps you guessing, right? You're not sure who's the bad guy. Who's the good guy? Who should I trust? Who's lying? They're all lying.
Right? It's also that thing of, I was thinking about this when I was watching it, where it's very, because it's not just machines that can mimic emotion. Like, there are certain people who are in the world who don't feel or maybe don't have a conscience or you know, have a personality disorder or whatever, where they're able to manufacture, like, understand what those emotions look like and can be very manipulative in the same way that she was. Like, it's just, it's so interesting to, like, go through the layers of, like, yes, but oh, what is empathy, and why did that, like, win him over, and how, I don't know, like, he knew she was a machine the whole time, but then
exactly. One thing that I really like about this movie is that in the first half of the movie, we think that this human Caleb, he's an examiner, that he's supposed to test the machine, the AI,
right?
But by the end of the movie, it turns out that no, this is not true. Actually, the Nathan wanted to test human against that smart AI.
Yeah.
And at the end, we see that AI is very smart, and she can trick both of them, even her creator. So that is awesome.
Into destroying each other.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, And then when the other machine, Kyoko. When she, like, I feel like she was sort of a, it seemed like Ava was giving her instructions. Like, we see her whispering to her in the hallway.
Yes, very, very smartly muted conversation.
Yeah.
So mysterious there.
But then Kyoko is the one who appeared to Ava, like, and she was like, who are you? So they're them discovering each other, and, like, just the constant observance you saw happening, like, both of them registering things. Like, you'd see Kyoko in bed while he was, like, making notes and watching Caleb and Ava interact, and her eyes were like, she was registering everything.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you guys what your favorite scene was, if you can recall one. Because I have one in particular while I was watching yesterday that stuck out to me. It's like, this gave me goosebumps.
The one I remembered from watching it the first time was the dancing scene.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a great scene.
Dancing scene is so good, and such a weird mix of emotions, right?
Yeah. It's very disturbing to, like, watch him do this dance that he choreographed. And,
right,
like,
and he's, like, making her do it, like, slavery.
Yeah.
Almost.
It's really... But that was the scene that was memorable to me from the first time watching it. Yeah. But I feel like actually my favorite scene might have been when she it was towards the end when she, you know, was like got her skin on. Mm-hmm. She's got her skin on. She's ready to hit the town. And she just walks to the elevator and goes in and the door closes and he's like, you know,
banging on the door.
Yeah. She can't hear him, but she knows he's there.
Yeah.
And then just before the door closes, she glances at him.
Exactly.
Yes.
This is my favorite. This is what I wanted to say.
Oh,
this
great.
One is my
oh,
favorite.
Oh, good.
Scene.
Oh, yay. Okay.
And she doesn't care.
She doesn't
no.
care.
No. I thought the whole time she wasn't even going to look. But there is that one split second. And that is a human thing to do. I would do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, I wouldn't do the same thing, but you know what I'm saying. Not evil.
Right. How do we get out of here?
You need a key card.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I walked right into it.
Yeah. So if you notice at the beginning, the Ava is completely naked and you can see the wires, I don't know, or whatever it's in its body, in yeah. her body. But by time she starts getting on some kind of dress and she gets more like human.
Yeah.
And then she put on a skin mm-hmm. and then clothes. And well, at the end of the movie, she's perfectly a human, right?
Yeah.
I think that is why the name of this movie is Ex Machina, which means in Latin, from the machine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that is amazing. So at the beginning, you can even hear all this, the very small machinery sounds.
Yes.
Yeah, when she's turning her head and stuff. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But by time, she completely turned into a human.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did you like that moment where she glances at him before the door closes?
It is so natural, and it shows that she is really mean and
yeah.
smart, and it shows that she really doesn't care about those emotions and love and nothing. It was just a trap.
Yeah.
Those are all tactics that
exactly.
she's learned to accomplish her goal, which I think, like, there are people, like my point earlier, there are people out there who do the same thing, like
right.
utilize emotions to get their way in whatever situation. And I also like, I mean, it's a real like rabbit hole of thinking about these things because she also, I mean, this is of course, what's the guy's name?
Not Nathan.
Caleb.
Nathan.
Yeah.
When Nathan's like talking to Caleb about the sexuality of the machine and how like there are sensors inside that actually will elicit a pleasure response.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, if that's true, and you know, consider the source, but if that's true, then the emotion, is there some way that the emotions or the connection would take hold in her somehow, like in a way that's like more lasting? And the answer at the end was, of course, no. But it's so convincing. It's so like she's so empathetic and so like even when she's watching Nathan die in the hallway, she's like looking at him a little sad, but mostly just curious, just like logging information.
Right,
right. She did such a great job. Alicia
so
Vikander. I don't know if I'm saying her name right, but
she
I read was trained as a ballet dancer. Which I think makes perfect sense in casting her and just in watching the movie because her movements are really, it looks like perfect human movements. Like
mm-hmm.
everything she does has such grace to it.
Mm.
And I don't know, usually when you see robots or AI or androids or something, they have kind of this like mechanical movement to them.
Yeah.
And I loved how they kind of went the other way and they said like, no, she's going to do everything perfect posture and just very mm-hmm. graceful, nothing unnecessary.
Even the looking away, like, yeah, there was nothing that wasn't totally necessary. Like when she had a thought, she looked away. But there was no like what I'm doing right now. I'm like bouncing all over the room. Oh, God. truly.
Breaking mics.
I feel crazy. But yeah, but like this is very human, I guess, or a very weird human, but but hers was still human, but everything had a purpose.
Yes,
like nothing was superfluous.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So my favorite part was the second time the power cut and she's in the room with Caleb. And she says, you're wrong about Nathan.
Right.
He isn't your friend. That, for me, set the movie in motion. That like, pushed on the accelerator for me. Because at that moment, it's like, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Now what do you do if you're Caleb?
That is an amazing scene, too. I agree.
Yeah. What an incredible moment right there.
Another scene that I loved was when he was, like, saw all the, he got into his system or whatever and saw these videos of these women just like, and also you can't separate when you see these like female bodies and the skin and being dragged and like, you know, beating on a door until her hands are gone.
Yeah.
You can't like separate the emotion from, like it feels so, like I totally get why he was so, convinced by that, but then when he, after seeing that, he went back to his bathroom and like looked at his own, like tried to see the machinery of his human body.
I had a question about that scene for you guys. So because I was a little bit confused rewatching that scene because he's concerned whether or not he's a robot, right? He's like checking if he's human, basically. And so he cuts his arm and like gushes with blood. It's just like blood goes everywhere. And then he gets upset about it, smears it on a mirror, and then punches the mirror, and that's pretty much the end of the scene. And so the other times I watched the film, I thought, oh, okay, he's human. That he was just checking if he's human, and he definitely is human. And while I was watching it this time, I was like, well, but he doesn't, there's no emotion to when he cuts his arm. Like, he's just looking at it. Like, it's nothing, you know, there's no pain, there's no squirming, you know what I mean? I get like the smallest cut on my hand, I'm freaking out. You know, I hate it.
I think it's less like, I agree, like that was my initial thought too, was, oh, he's checking to make sure he's human. But I actually think it's more like, what it's more existential than that. I think it's more like, what is a human? Like, what is this? Like, how is this different from that?
Right.
It's not really too much difference.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
This is the thing. So the type of materials are different, but if you can make such a smart, intelligent AI, what is the difference?
Yeah. I came across a theory here on Reddit. So, you know, I'm not a Redditor. I don't know what the term is there.
A Reddit head.
I'm not a redhead.
I think that's a Reddit.
But they had this theory that I thought was really compelling. So I think I'm just going to throw the theory at you guys, throw some evidence, and I'm sure Mo will figure it out in 2 seconds. So the theory is that Caleb is a robot. Here's the evidence. So he never gets drunk, even though he's drinking along with Nathan a few times. He's the one in a small box, while Ava is the one that's like free to move around examining Caleb, it looks like. She asks him at one point if he likes Mozart, and he responds saying he likes Depeche Mode, which is a great band, by the way, and a band that uses mostly synthesizers. He says he says quotes a lot when he's talking, which seems like he's taking information from a database.
Right.
And then when they're outside, Nathan says that Ava is like not the one that's groundbreaking. She's not the groundbreaking model. That is probably the next one, maybe referring to Caleb, ? And then he's asked about his memory, his earliest memory. And he starts talking about something in kindergarten. She goes, no, you're lying. What's your, like, there's something else. And he goes, oh, there is one, but I don't know if it's a memory or not. It's my earliest memory. It's just the color blue and a female voice. And so maybe that's referring to Ava. And also all the, like, the doors in the compound have blue lights and they make, a tone.
Yeah.
Right.
Go ahead.
I mean, that's, I will say, when it first started, I was like, yeah, right. But as this theory went on, that is really interesting. I mean, I can totally see that argument. But I would say, I think it's more that Caleb, I think it's not that Caleb's a machine. I think that he, as a human, is being treated like a machine, being observed and tested and, like, going, like, I think it's more like, him he is a human in the world. And then what does that look like when you're, you know,
in the lab?
Yeah, when the rat suddenly becomes the scientist.
Exactly. So I agree. Well, that is an interesting idea, but I don't think so. I think, well, the idea was that to show that when artificial intelligence is so smart, then at some point human will be, I don't know, the rat that we want to test it in the lab.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To see how smart is AI.
Yeah.
You know, so in this case we tested a human human against AI because we wanted to actually check the AI.
Right.
So it is like the idea of the singularity that, well, eventually human will be slaves and AI will be shepherd.
Right.
You know, so
What do you think about that, by the way? The Ray Kurzweil singularity? Is near, yeah. Well, is the singularity near, I guess is my question.
That's a hypothesis. So that's a theory that say, so it refers to the time when computer power grows so fast without any limit.
Mm-hmm.
And then AI can enter into an endless self-improvement cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And it can improve itself, make it better and better and stronger and stronger. And at some point the AI will surpass human intelligence and then overtake us and then take us over and they take control of the world.
Yeah.
So that is the idea. So this is an hypothesis. Some people agree, some people. So it's a very, there are a lot of disagreements about this. But some people like Stephen Hawking supported this idea. Elon Musk is one of the famous, well-known people who is really concerned about the singularity and suggested to put some regulations on computer growth or AI growth.
Yeah.
So, we really don't know, but in theory, it can happen. This is not impossible.
Is that where you weigh in, you know, a gun to your head scenario, not to threaten you?
Well, for me, I am very, to be honest, very optimistic about AI and
nice to hear.
Artificial neural networks. So I always like to use it for social good.
Sure.
To help people, for example, healthcare is one of the applications. Mm-hmm. So if we can build an AI system, an artificial neural network system that can detect or diagnose cancer better than doctors, more accurate than doctors, so that is a really good thing.
It's very
exciting.
It can
save people's lives. So we are working on this. So in one of our projects, we are working on a system, an AI system that can detect cervical cancer. More accurate than pathologists.
You're putting people out of a job.
That is true. I agree. So this is
that's
one of
another
the disadvantages.
Gigantic problem, right?
Yeah. That's right.
Okay.
I agree, but we can save people's life.
Yeah,
okay?
That's important. Yeah.
So that's why I am optimistic about artificial neural networks, but I understand Elon Musk's concern.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Because if we don't control it and let AI control everything in our life, especially with these new technologies, we will let AI improve itself. So this is a type of machine learning algorithms called reinforcement learning.
Okay.
That we put an AI system in an environment and let it interact with the environment and improve itself based on a reward punishment
policy. Like a puppy.
Yeah.
Yeah, a puppy that can take over the world and put us in cages.
Exactly. And it can do it 24/7 for years. And after some time, it will be definitely smarter than us. So do you know the story of AlphaGo?
Yes, our producer Brett showed me some stuff about
so
that today.
AlphaGo is a program by a company named DeepMind this is Google's DeepMind now. Mm-hmm. Go is a game. I believe it's the most sophisticated game on the board. Much more sophisticated than chess, for example.
It's the one with all those like little white and black pieces.
Exactly.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
I've never played it.
So this is a very sophisticated game. But AlphaGo, or DeepMind, designed a program called AlphaGo that play this game, that can play this game and just let it play 24/7, play with itself. 24/7 over years.
A man's dream.
And yeah, in 2015.
And a woman.
Sorry about that. I just think they're more sophisticated. But
so in 2015, AlphaGo could beat the most professional Go player in the world.
Mm-hmm.
In the world. In 2015. And that was amazing.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
so it means that. Well, this is an example. It's a very simple example. But we let AI enter a self-improvement cycle and improves itself. And now it is more intelligent than human.
Yeah.
This is a simple example.
I mean, it's great to hear that you're optimistic about it because you're much smarter than me. And so when you talk
about... Well,
trust me, I'm very sure.
Trust him.
Yeah. You're going to want to trust me on this one. When I hear you say that it can run itself all the time and expand its own limits, that is just like innately frightening to me. It just sounds like, well, then why wouldn't it, you know, take over? So I don't know. I like your optimism, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that the answer to understand like what would stop it from taking over is what's its goal, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like what is it looking to do? If it's just looking to constantly self-improve and it sees...
I would just assume that it would see us as a threat. Because it has to like exist on the planet. Mm-hmm. We're ruining the planet.
We're the caretakers of it.
Right. We're doing a crap job.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, we can do better than them.
Yeah.
What use are they? I mean, they are funny and they make some good tunes, Depeche Mode. But maybe we don't need them around. Wipe them out.
Yeah.
That decision becomes quick to me. I don't know.
I think what the question that this movie brings up is like, okay, so humans and AI... AI, yes, like if it goes into this this realm where it is gathering information and like constantly like improving itself and eventually is smarter than humans, then where do emotions come in? Mm-hmm. Where do they come in? Like, 'cause what makes us human is our feelings about things and our conscience and our morals and all of these sort of not tangible and not even like really linear data points. Like they're just kind of it's indescribable and it's what makes us human. This movie says that, oh, you know, the human factor is a weakness. The emotion is a weakness and it is a tool that this AI uses to accomplish its goal. But in the event that AI does take over, where like, you know, they're running everything, then I believe, and maybe this is naive of me, but I believe that the human emotion factor that will become once again a strength of ours versus it being a weakness, because it's something that this machine doesn't have, even with all the learning it can do. I mean, what am I saying? I'm an actress, so I'm really, really pushing for the emotions here.
I would agree with that. I mean, I think that would be, to me, like one of the last steps of AI is to learn emotion and understand how to emote.
But how can you? It's not rational.
Know.
Like that's because all the other data that the AI is learning is all very like logical, rational. Like it's all like information that we can see the track of. But emotions have no, I feel like they're sometimes sometimes they are, they do follow a track, but then sometimes they're very irrational and mm-hmm. don't follow specific
right. But
lines.
But still, we are training them.
Right.
Okay, so if we can define some kind of award or reward for them to be emotional.
Right.
Then they try to achieve that reward. Hmm. So this way we can train them to be emotional.
Yeah, so
this is one way.
The question is, like, can you learn emotions?
Right, like, well, how would you know if they're just replicating emotion for the reward or if they're legitimately sad about losing the Super Bowl or whatever?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Actually, for one of the strategies to avoid singularity, to make sure that at least for now AI is safe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is the three rules of robots. Have you heard of that?
I have heard of them because movie. Of course, all my information is from stupid movies. iRobot, I believe they talked about this with Will Smith. It's like, and I'm going to get this wrong for sure, but I'm taking a guess anyway, so on me for that. It's that they can't hurt a human. Is that one of them?
First rule.
Okay, one out of one.
Oh, it's like the Hippocratic Oath, right?
Yeah, so far. Which they can't, oh my God, what is it, lie? Is that one of them?
And the second law is they should obey human unless it conflicts with first law.
Oh, so you can't say, go murder my friend.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
That makes
okay.
sense.
And the third law?
The third uh-huh. law is buy music straight from artists. Don't use Spotify. No, I don't know. I don't
This
remember.
Is great. Yeah,
so the third law is to protect themselves. The AI should protect themselves as long as it does not conflict the first two rules.
Okay, got you.
I
so
see.
It's like a survival instinct.
Yeah.
The third law.
Wow.
Got it. Interesting.
Can you imagine if we all lived by robot rules?
Yeah, we should probably live by robot rules. That would make things a lot better.
That's really cool. I'm glad to know that there are rules in place. I'm keep coming back to this point about emotion, but it is like the idea of like learning emotion. I think you can learn the external showings of emotion, or like what
right.
what emotion looks like, what it sounds like, what it seems to feel like.
Yeah, it's kind of the sociopath thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, but you can never really, unless you're actually feeling them.
That is right.
You can't truly understand it.
Yeah, but there's another problem here for AI. Is AI is so smart, like Ava, she can pretend that she's emotional.
Right. Mm-hmm.
She can pretend. She pretended that she is in love with
Caleb. Yeah.
But she was not.
Worked on
so
me,
So that
too.
Is the problem. This is the second
yeah.
problem.
Right. Yeah.
And we're saps.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, we're going to fall for that stuff every time, I feel like, as
totally.
Humans. Like, if somebody's, like, way smarter than us, they'll totally just...
Well, Caleb really, like, when he and Nathan are both kind of unveiling their plans to each other at the end before it all goes crazy, and Caleb is, like, putting together the pieces of, oh, you found me based on my internet searches. You know I'm single. Mm-hmm. You know I don't have any family. You know that, like... So it he was sort of a prime target to be
totally.
Swayed by that. Like, I wonder if it was, if the Caleb was a Caleb who was in a relationship with someone.
If it would be the same.
Would it have the same effect?
Right, yeah. It was kind of cheating, almost. He made that argument, I remember, in the film. And I was like, mm-hmm. it is kind of cheating. I mean, you're getting maybe a similar result as you would, like you're saying, if somebody was in a relationship or married or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is kind of like, but you really... singled like exactly what he wanted, exactly
yeah.
what he needed for his life.
Yeah, his
you know?
Deepest want.
Yes.
And then would Ava's, they would shift. Like the tactic wouldn't be, I'm in love with you. Maybe the tactic would be like, which she kind of utilized here, but I'm a victim of abuse. I'm like,
right.
What's being done to me is wrong.
Yeah.
And you have the ability to like fix this. You're a good man. You're a good person. You can... correct this wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very curious like how she would adjust based on who her rat is.
Yeah, right. That's true. Well, hopefully Ex Machina 2.
Oh, come on. Come
they
on.
They trap her. It's the same exact scenario.
No. It's two Avas and it's a Ooh. Freaky Friday situation.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, so getting back to the movie for just a second, the dancing robot scene, I just wanted to say that I researched dancing robots because how can I not Google dancing robots? And I highly suggest you guys do the same if you have not, because you'll come across the main thing, which is Boston Dynamics. Do you know about these robots?
Of course. I know Boston Robotics Company.
Oh, okay.
I don't know anything about robots.
So there's this company, Boston Dynamics. Oh, Brett's pulling it up right
please.
Now.
Please.
Do
so
the one,
excited.
The one that should come up. Yeah, it's that one. It's to a Bruno Mars song, and it does dance moves, and it's extraordinary.
Wow.
Yeah, hold on. There's one move he does. Wait, let it play, Brett. It's this one.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that incredible?
That is incredible.
That's incredible.
Well, so there is another one that the dog wants to open the door.
Open the door. Yeah, I was going to mention that one. That was insane. Opens the door and holds the door for another robot.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. My God.
This one is a crazy show. So I always show this movie in my class.
Oh, great.
To a student.
I'm sure they love it.
Look, this one doesn't have to open the door. So it calls his friend.
Right.
And this one has a... something. Look,
Mary just gasped.
He is
terrifying.
Looking for the handle. Hold the door with the leg.
Pull it.
Open
I mean,
it.
That's so scary. That reminds me, honestly, of like the raptors in Jurassic Park.
And them communicating with each other is very scary.
Yes, very scary.
That's the other thing about mortality is like Ava's perception of mortality, like... you know, with humans, our perception of it is sad. It's like it's a loss, and we're all scared of it.
Yeah.
Or I am, but but mortality to her, like, this is her whole thing is he's gonna kill me. Like, she's sort of utilizing the human fear and the human feelings around death. Like her feelings are primal, sounds like a crazy word to use because she's not an animal in any way, but it's much more primal. It's just continuing on.
Yeah. Like it's like the third law you were talking about. Is that
she's
survival?
Not sad to die. Like she doesn't. You know, it's just interesting.
Yeah, it's like a mechanical, I need to keep going.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Oh, right, yes.
I don't know where she's going or what she's doing in the world, by the way, which I thought was a really funny prospect of like, okay, now she's in the world, she's free.
Well, she's in a cute outfit.
She's
I'll
definitely
tell you
cute.
That. Love that dress.
Is she going to be a cute barista? Is she going to be
know?
A baker? I don't know. You know, whatever she does, she can do it really
this
well.
This is what we need. We need AI in bakeries because it's so precise.
Yeah.
And the pies would be amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
I want vegan chocolate cake that tastes the same, and Ava can do it.
Oh, Ava can do it. You better believe it.
Okay, so speaking of something a little bit silly, there's something called TensorFlow that Google put together. Do you guys know about this?
No.
Do you know about TensorFlow?
I know.
Tell me what you know about TensorFlow.
So the TensorFlow is a framework by Google. This is actually the most popular one to implement artificial neural networks.
Okay.
So you can do many different mathematical operations in that, but it is particularly very popular for artificial neural networks, different types of.
So you put a bunch of data into it. It can help you analyze it and search for specific things and
build a neural network based on the data that we provide to it.
Okay.
So there's a concept called machine learning. So machine learning is a topic, is a very important topic in AI, maybe the most important topic. So in machine learning, we try to design and develop a program that can learn from data. that can let computer learn from experience or learn from data without being explicitly programmed. So we don't write. So in classic programming, you write some codes to you tell your algorithm what to do exactly. So your code can include some kind of if-else condition, check this condition, and based on that calculate something. For example, calculate your tax report, something like that.
That'd be great.
But in machine learning, we don't do that. In machine learning, we write some codes that can just learn from data.
Gotcha.
And then we provide it with a lot of data, whatever data you want, okay? And it will learn from data by time to find the best solution to solve the problem.
So you don't have to manage it as much.
Exactly.
Like you can explicitly. Just kind of let it go.
Yeah. So for example, let me give you an example in healthcare. We have a medical image. There is a tumor in that image, and we want to detect if it's a cancerous tumor or a benign tumor.
Okay.
So in classic methods, you can define some thresholds from human understanding, size of that, type of that, location of that, many different things, and check those parameters using some if-else conditions. And if it meets some specific conditions that we think are the best conditions, the best thresholds, we detect that this is a cancerous tumor. But in other hand, in machine learning, we don't do that. We just write a code that can learn and then provide like 1,000 images of benign tumor and 1,000 images of malignant tumor and let it work on them and learn and find a pattern of that. And then the machine will be able to distinguish between these two.
In a way, a human couldn't.
Exactly.
Potentially.
The rules can be completely meaningless for us.
Mm-hmm.
But it is data driven. It means that it's derived based on data. Mm. So that is why in many cases it is much more accurate. Because it is supported by data. It is supported by what happened in the past for previous patients. Mm-hmm. That's why it can be more accurate. So artificial neural network is a specific type of machine learning which is inspired by functionality of human brain.
Gotcha.
So we want to mimic human brain neurons and then connect them to make neural networks. And this wiring between them defines the functionality of this network.
Okay.
TensorFlow is a framework to implement that.
Well, I
too
think
technical.
No, I loved it
please.
All. Mary and I are all about this stuff.
I mean, yeah, I'm loving hearing about it.
Yeah, same. And I think an equally important example of how TensorFlow can be used was done by a man named Adam Heard. Mm-hmm. Do you know what Adam Heard did?
I think I've heard of his name. Yeah.
You've heard of his name? Were you trying to make a pun joke right there?
I'm not.
No pun intended. So Adam Heard decided to insert all of the scripts of Friends. He put in all of the scripts and then essentially asked for a new script based on all of this data. And so TensorFlow made one. And of course, it's a disaster. It's completely all over the place.
Funny.
And so I thought it would be fun since we have such an incredible actress here.
Oh, my goodness. It's my dream.
Us.
Thank you so much.
I have a paper in front of you, Mary. I'll turn it over. And so here we have...
I thought this was a blank piece of paper.
It was. I'm a bit of a magician.
I don't know what machine could be smarter than me. Okay.
So here we have a piece of the script. I'll read the scene directions and who is speaking. And if you would, Mary, I'd love for you to read for everyone.
Ah!
Is that okay?
Oh my gosh, yes.
This is your dream.
This is my dream.
Fantastic.
Can really show my versatility.
So we'll have some sort of music here for the friend. I don't know what music they have to insert in between scenes, but we'll put that. And then, so here we go, Adam Heard's TensorFlow Google script for a new friend scene. So here's the scene. I'm just going to read this verbatim. Scene, Monica and Rachel's. They're running outside. Monica.
I'm ran off.
Rachel.
I know.
Rachel to Monica.
Wow, you still have to get married. I ducked to work.
Monica.
Hey, Ross, come here.
They kiss. Phoebe.
No, I would like to propose to my kid.
They all stand in bed. Vem is upset. Time lapse. Joey.
Seriously, give me a clown on the table, that's all.
Monica whispering.
She's in London.
There you go. Wonderful job.
That is so funny. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you so much for reading it.
That is hilarious. I saw something similar of, I can't remember who posted it, but they did the same thing where they put in, like, made AI or something watch hours and hours of, or some sort of, maybe TensorFlow, watch hours and hours of stand-up okay. footage, and then it generated its own stand-up set.
Whoa. Right.
It is so funny.
Wow, I have to look that up.
You have to look it up. It's so funny. But it's a similar idea. It's like, you can know all the data you can know, but there's still, like, basic story structure is not
unteachable,
which almost is an emotional understanding, like what story structure is. So
yeah, absolutely,
that's very funny.
I don't think the whole script is online in case you're searching for that. I think it's just like these little parts as like images, so I wrote out part of it, but
I love it.
But anyways, I also wanted to mention how Nathan in the film is a functioning alcoholic.
Yeah.
He's drinking the entire film. He randomly gets very, very drunk.
Yeah.
And so I have a little list of people in history who were also functioning alcoholics. Do you guys know of any functioning alcoholics you'd like to maybe venture a guess? Famous functioning alcoholics.
Scientists?
Sure.
Anybody? Einstein.
Einstein, not on my list. I don't think he was a functioning alcoholic.
Yeah, no. I'm
probably
wrong.
Goody Two-Shoes.
Yeah.
That Albert.
He was very healthy.
Mo, you don't look up to any drunks? Surprised.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't think of any either.
So I'll go through the list. I have certain little stories and stuff. So Vincent Van Gogh was a famous drunk.
Uh-huh.
Stephen King, I think through the 70s and 80s, was like very drunk. And
he said he wrote Cujo blackout drunk.
Right, exactly. Like, he couldn't remember it at all. And it was...
And it's a great story.
Very successful.
Yeah.
Ernest Hemingway, drunk. Orson Welles, his appetite for food and booze was legendary. Apparently, he'd eat his supper at his dressing table, which included normally 2 steaks, 2 baked potatoes, an entire pineapple, a triple pistachio ice cream, and a bottle of scotch.
An entire pineapple?
Yeah.
That's
very
so
strange.
Much work.
Just an entire pineapple is also just so much food.
Yeah, truly.
It's really a lot. And so sweet. I don't know. I thought that was ridiculous. Former President Richard Nixon was drunk throughout his presidency.
Wow.
Which I didn't know. And finally, to relate back to the film, Jackson Pollock was drunk almost every day and night of his adult life.
How about Winston Churchill?
Winston Churchill. I didn't put him on the list because from what I found out, he was drinking a lot, but he kind of maintained like a buzz because he was like raised on it or something. Hmm. So he would have wine with meals and be drinking hard alcohol during the day. But there's like very rare instances where he was very drunk.
Hmm. Yes, because a high-functioning drunk is like completely drunk but able to be in the world.
Yes.
Like, and yeah, the but is a little bit different. It's like, it's still a kind of dependency, I guess, but.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I'm not much of a drinker, so I can't imagine just even drinking every day. It seems like a buzz is just too much for me. Okay, so briefly, I wanted to talk about the Turing test. Alan Turing in 1950 made this test, and then supposedly in 1966, Joseph Weizenbaum, I'm probably saying that wrong, made ELISA, which beat the test. And then Kenneth Colby created Perry in 1972, which was, quote, ELISA with attitude, which also beat the test. And so, I don't know. I was just surprised to find out that for so long now we've been able to create robots that beat the test. And essentially the test is kind of what happens in Ex Machina, where somebody is, they don't see, that's the difference. They don't see the robot, they don't see the person. It's through text where they ask questions and get responses back.
Right.
And if they're able to tell which one's the robot, which one's a human.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of, I don't know, I just wanted to ask you if we are just beyond the Turing test, if that's like an easily beatable thing.
Well, technically, no. So the thing is that in 1950, when Alan Turing published this paper, he first asked, can computer think? So this was the main question. And then he argued that, okay, this is very difficult to understand if a computer can, to figure out if a computer is really can think or not. So let's do a, he proposed a simpler test. So he said, okay, if you come in interact with a computer and a computer can mimic human perfectly, really good, act exactly like a human that you cannot understand you are interacting with a computer, then the test is passed. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this was the idea to find how smart a computer is. Technically, all of those examples that you mentioned, they're very specific. So, for example, Eliza, well, they tricked people, but the Turing test, it's not a perfect test. It still cannot show if the computer is really has real consciousness or not.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Does it have self-awareness or not, or just pretend to be human? Okay. Mm-hmm. So, for example, this Eliza one that you mentioned, the trick was that the computer pretended to be a psychologist or something, and this way, when it communicated with people, it tried to return back their question to themselves.
Oh, okay.
Like, okay, so change the question that they ask and return it back to the question and claim that, okay, I'm a psychologist. I want to see what you think.
Bit of a cheap move.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So, or that the last one, I think, I forgot the name, but the computer pretended that it was a 13-year-old... Ukrainian boy, something like
sounds
that.
A lot easier to replicate.
Yeah, so it pretended and of course it couldn't speak English correctly. That's why
it
could convince 33 of the audience that, okay, he's right. This is a poor 13-year-old baby.
Yeah, I feel bad for this kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is the fact. But still, again, the Turing test is a real good test, but it's not perfect. We still don't know if a computer can pass it. It really has consciousness or not.
Yeah. What do you guys like? What would you ask the computer, knowing it's an AI?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would you ask to test its consciousness?
This is really difficult. We really cannot figure out if the computer has self-awareness or it pretends.
Right.
I would ask, this. Honestly, the first question that came to my mind, and I'm sorry, it's crude.
Oh, I'm glad you're saying the first one.
Would be like, what does a fart feel like?
Okay.
Because, you know, she can describe to me like, oh, it's a release of pressure, but no one describes it like that.
I was going to say, yeah, if I ask a human and they say it's a release of pressure.
Exactly.
Say, like,
machine.
You're either a huge dork or I'm talking to a robot that has no feelings.
Yeah, but something maybe, I mean, she could probably learn and describe it in a way that works with human semantics and like could figure out, I'm sure, a way to make that sound natural. And
yeah. Also funny that you prefaced it with warning us that it's crude.
Guys,
it's a very elementary
It's
level.
Really crude, okay? I'm very prim. I don't know if you haven't registered that.
I was just preparing myself for the worst when you said crude. But I mean, it's a rated R podcast, so whatever you want. Do you have something, Mo, if I can call you Mo still?
Sure.
Pretty deep in. But
about consciousness? I was wondering if we had a smart AI like that, and if we ask her, do you have consciousness? Are you self? Do you have self-awareness? And this is a good question for her to answer.
Yeah.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Let's see what she says about herself.
Mm-hmm.
Because she... well, I mean,
what is the definition of self-awareness? Well, but the thing is that at least Ava, she had access. So she was, again, data-driven. So trained based on past data.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a search engine company. So
yeah,
that company, Nathan's company, they had every data in the planet. Mm-hmm. And they provided all of those data, search queries, everything collected from cell phones, whatever.
Yeah, Blue Book.
Exactly. They provided all of those data to this computer to train Ava. Mm-hmm. So Ava alone, she has knowledge of everything, everybody yeah. else in the planet.
Mm. Right.
So that is... If we do that, well, that is why I'm telling this is doable. This is really doable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there are companies that have access to this information,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Speaking of, so to me, it was pretty obvious that Blue Book was like a combination of Facebook and Google.
Google.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Exactly.
On the head there, hit it on the head. So there was this kind of a cool Easter egg in the movie that people, once again, on Reddit picked up. Thank you, Reddit. So there's code at one point. Caleb is entering code when he's like trying to fix the system, you know, like unlock the doors for Ava. And so this code is like actual code. And so people actually ran the code.
Wow.
And it came out to an ISBN number, which was the number for a book. And that book was called Embodiment and the Inner Life by Murray Shanahan, who is a professor of cognitive robotics and was an advisor on the film.
Oh, my gosh.
So pretty cool move.
Man.
So, I mean, I have other stuff here, guys. I know we're kind of like running low on time. I mean, I had more stuff on Elon Musk. I was going to ask you if he's like a fear monger about AI or if you agree that it could destroy humanity. But I agree with him.
Again, as I mentioned, I'm optimistic, but I understand his concern.
Okay, so kind
we
of both
should,
sides.
We sh- yeah. Well, this is reasonable to have kind of control on this.
Gotcha.
Proceed
so
with
be,
caution.
Exactly.
Yes, there should be regulations in place. You think that's?
I agree.
Okay, I'll tell him you said so. And
what?
He works downstairs.
Yeah.
I also found out that Oscar Isaac grew up in Miami, which is where I'm from. I thought that was fantastic.
That's cool.
And that he was in a ska band. I'm a musician, so I found that fascinating. I like ska music.
Yeah.
He opened for Green Day, his band, at one point. So
that's
he was
incredible.
Living the dream his whole life, I guess.
Truly.
Because now he's
in
destroying.
Star Wars.
And then there was the Utah data center, because at the beginning they're on that helicopter and he says like, oh, we've been over his estate for 2 hours, as if he owns this like gigantic. So I was like, what's the biggest I don't know, estate or
privately
compound
owned
that we have?
Yeah.
And so I came across this
is it in US?
Yeah. So, well, I don't know if it's the biggest, but I
think that one was not in US.
In the movie, you're right. It was
Norway?
Yes, Norway.
Oh,
so
beautiful.
It's just gorgeous out
just
there.
Just gorgeous.
It really is so like
find
stunning.
A fault with it. Good luck.
yeah, they had a like as the act breaks, I think it was like these gorgeous shots of nature, which really, I don't know, it seemed like he spent like equal time
on
like, robotic stuff and just this beautiful landscape,
which was really smart. Yeah,
this movie's so good. So the NSA has this Utah data center, which was $1.5 billion to build, and its precise mission is classified. And it's
aliens.
It's 1.5 million square feet, and it's the site that's linked to PRISM. You know about PRISM? PRISM?
No.
Well, first of all, it has a terrible logo. So for such a expansive corporation or mission or whatever, they really need to find a graphic designer, in my opinion. The logo is atrocious. Look it up. But it was started in 2007, and its existence was revealed 6 years later by Edward Snowden, which he like leaked these classified documents, and it was like all that stuff that were spying on everybody, basically. It was like really just scary, terrifying, and it related to the movie. It's, you know, it's him taking, he says at one point, like, I took everything from all the cell phone networks, but they couldn't out me because they'd be outing themselves.
Right.
Right.
And I used all that information. It's like kind of exactly what the NSA is doing. They're like not telling anybody mm-hmm. about it, and somebody has to flee and leak. So look up pictures of that Utah data center, because it seems spooky, overlordy.
Spooky. It's yeah. very haunted there.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of ghosts over
of ghosts.
In Utah. But yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much it. We have a usually, you know, plugs section. If you guys, you know, have something, should people take your class? Is there a shadow program we can come learn about neural networks in?
I love if you can come.
Oh, okay, great.
That would be great.
I don't think Mary's doing anything.
No.
For the most part.
No, that would be amazing. Is it kind of an open door thing where people can, or I mean, you'd have to sign up, I assume, but would you have to be a student to sign up?
I teach several courses. Mainly, I have two courses, Introduction to Data Science and Advanced Data Science. They are very popular courses, so there are more than 100 students in my class.
Wow.
Okay.
And I'm developing some new courses, deep learning.
Cool.
Great. This is if you need help, again, we can offer advice. I mean,
that would be my pleasure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So people should take those courses if they're going to Cal State.
Of course. Yeah.
Pun intended. Mary, you have something you want to tell people about?
I am performing all the time at Upright Citizens Brigade here in Los Angeles. With several different teams. I'm there every weekend pretty much, so you can look me up or find me on Twitter, and I always post about shows there at mholland85. And then otherwise I would say you can check out all episodes of the show I did for NBC called Shrink are now streaming on Hulu, so go treat yourself to a little bit of that if you want to.
Yeah.
And keep watching television, please. <Yeah. laughs>
I think they will. I think it helps help us focus on something else other than what's actually happening.
Yeah, it's right? A nice little distraction. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you guys so much. I had a ton of fun. And let's do this again tomorrow.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Sure.
Same time, same place.
Same time, same place.
Yeah. Love it.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for having us.
Of course.
That was so fun.
Ad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our social media producers are Kate Baker and EJ Gullett, and the executing test producer is Brett Kushner. You can follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show or write us an email if you wish to do so at badscience@seeker.com. Let us know what movies you'd like us to do in the future and what you thought about this episode. We also recommend you telling a friend about the show. That's always a nice way to show us some appreciation. And be sure to tune in next week where we will be talking about RoboCop. See you then.